Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's October 21st, 29 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 27 degrees. And on the phone with the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for a look at your Tuesday afternoon forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at plenty of sunshine as we make our way through our Tuesday. Temperatures will be a little warmer than what we saw to begin the week. We're looking at highs in the Park City area in the upper 50s after these freezing temperatures this morning. We'll see highs climbing into the mid-60s in the Heber Valley after these freezing temperatures this morning. So we're looking forward to some changes as we go throughout the day. Make sure you dress in layers because it will be very winter-like to start. It'll feel pretty nice as we get into the afternoon hours. As we go into your Tuesday night into Wednesday, we're going to see clouds on the increase out there. We'll see those temperatures still dropping down into the lower 30s, though, in Park City and the Heber Valley as we get into your Wednesday morning. High temperatures as we go throughout your Wednesday will climb into the mid-60s in Park City. Highs will climb into the upper 60s in the Heber Valley. Wednesday night into Thursday, that's when the clouds thicken up and we'll see partly to mostly cloudy skies. That'll hold temperatures above freezing into the upper 30s to kick off your Thursday morning. Thursday afternoon, though, we will actually have to add in a chance of an isolated shower during the day on Thursday as some moisture moves by to the south of us. This will primarily affect areas south of I-80, but be aware there could be an isolated shower too Wednesday night and early Thursday. High temperatures on Thursday, though, climb into the mid-50s in Park City. We'll be in the low 60s in the Heber Valley. That system will quickly exit the state as we get into the end of the week, so your Friday heading into your Saturday is looking pretty good. We'll call it sunny skies on your Friday. Temperatures will climb near 60 in Park City on Friday afternoon with mid-60s for highs in the Heber Valley. By the time we get towards your Saturday, we'll call it partly cloudy skies, and by late Saturday afternoon, we could see a couple of isolated showers sneaking into the area. But overall, most of the day should be dry, highs in the upper 50s in Park City, highs in the mid-60s as you get towards the Heber Valley. Now, as we head into next week, that's Sunday night into Monday, rain will become likely and colder air mixes in with that rain. Rain will likely change snow in Park City, and we'll have a rain-snow mix potential as we get into the Heber Valley. Some accumulations likely, so we've got to watch that. Could be a significant system with colder conditions building in after that with highs in the 30s in Park City by next Tuesday and highs in the mid-40s in the Heber Valley. As we get your latest forecast of the Wasatch Back, I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybow. Writer Linda George and filmmaker Russ Downard talk about their Park City Trails History Project and film. And from Recycle Utah, Board Chair Ken Barfield is joined by Community Outreach Manager Chelsea Hafer with the latest from the Recycling Center. Taking a look now at some local news, Utah's highest court will decide whether Camas Valley residents can vote to form a new town. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports West Hills' sponsor has filed an emergency appeal after the vote was blocked.
West Hills' town sponsor and real estate attorney Derek Anderson appealed to the Utah Supreme Court October 17th. He's arguing that 3rd District Court Judge Matthew Bates was wrong to block a vote on the town proposed between Camas and Hideout weeks before the election. Bates deemed parts of Utah's incorporation law unconstitutional, while Anderson maintains the process he followed complies with the Utah Constitution. His petition, filed with the state's high court, says justices must, quote, remove the cloud over the election and allow votes to count. The court papers state voters now lack clarity about whether to complete and submit their ballots and whether their votes will count. At present, their votes will not be counted. The Utah Supreme Court agreed to take up the case within a day and is asking the parties to file all arguments by October 24th so the justices can issue a ruling before the November 4th election. If the Supreme Court rules in his favor, the number of people voting will have more than doubled. According to Summit County Clerk Eve First, there are now 96 registered voters within West Hills' 3,600-acre boundaries. In January, there were just 47. Some of them have registered within the past week. After mail-in ballots already went out, they may not receive ballots in the mail unless the Utah Supreme Court decides the election must go on. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And Wasatch Back students looking to enhance their winter sports skills can now sign up for the Youth Sports Alliance's seasonal programs. Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher says that registration for the nonprofit's winter sports program is now open online for all ages and skill levels.
So learn to ski, learn to snowboard, cross country, ski jumping, freestyle, and park and pipe are some of the options. There's really something for all levels. We have beginners, but then intermediate skiers can do those more advanced programs. Last year, nearly 900 students participated in our snow programs.
Programs for Park City School District students are on Friday afternoons, while activities for the Heber Valley are held every Monday. After-school programs for the Wallaman School of Discovery are scheduled for Thursdays. There are also options for homeschool students, according to Development Director Ashley Laxo.
We want to make sure that all of the programs are accessible to students from all different kinds of financial backgrounds. So we have scholarships and we have discounts. So some of the discounts are sibling discounts, teacher discounts, first responders discounts, just to ensure that all kids can participate in our programs.
Each winter program runs 4 to 5 weeks. The deadline to register is November 30th. Laxo says that they rely on hundreds of volunteers to operate. Applications to volunteer, which does require a background check, can also be found on the Youth Sports Alliance website. The nonprofit is hosting its largest fundraiser of the year, Jan's Winter Welcome, this Saturday at Stein Erickson Lodge. The event is sold out, but residents can still participate in the opportunity drawings. More information on winter programs, volunteering, and Jan's Winter Welcome can be found online at kpcw.org. Well, the Wasatch County Council isn't meeting this week, but it is budget season, and on the phone with a preliminary look at the budget as well as some other issues, I have Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybow. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the budget. Where are you in the process?
So we're in kind of the final stages of preparing our tentative budget that we'll present to the council in the first part of November.
Okay, so the council doesn't have that yet. At this point, are you increasing any, proposing any tax increases?
Yeah, so the county is considering a truth and taxation hearing for Parks and Rec specifically. So the council has set that we're looking at raising about a little over $200,000. That would be on average about $3.50 for an average home. And that's something that they're considering, but haven't yet approved.
All right. And then in terms of any new positions, are you requesting any new full-time employees?
Yeah, we actually have a lot of requests. Some of the things that we're discussing right now are, we talked about earlier in this year, a historian position, and talked with the council about some of their priorities, about how that matches up with what are the funds that are available. I think we're looking at potentially positions in our attorney's office, sheriff's office, Parks and Rec associated with that truth and taxation increase. And I think that's generally the positions that we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you had talked earlier about maybe some increases for the library. And I guess I'm surprised to find out that you only have one library for the entire county, and that includes all of the municipalities as well?
Yeah. I think a really amazing facility. I think there is an interest in expanding the reach of that, particularly to the Jordan L Basin. But at the moment, we just have the one facility supported by a property tax levy.
All right. So when you talk about expanding the reach, moving it north, then having something available?
Yeah. So what we've talked about is, as we build facilities up in that area, of ensuring that maybe there is a portion of a facility that might be able to service as a drop-off or pickup location, or a community space up there that could be an extension of the library. Right now, we partner with, actually, I believe it's Summit County's library system, to bring a bookmobile up into the hideout area. And that's also something that we're looking at, is a long-term plan for what a Wasatch County bookmobile might look like.
All right. What are some of the other heavy lifts for the upcoming year?
You know, there's a lot of focus right now on our road infrastructure. We did a needs assessment this last year to kind of get our arms around the state of Wasatch County roads. And so we're looking to be able to set aside a pretty significant portion of funds to make sure that we're adequately investing in that infrastructure, and we don't end up with a fiscal cliff of deteriorating roads that we haven't been maintaining. So thankfully, a lot of these are still in relatively new condition, because we have had a lot of growth over the last, you know, few decades. But we're hoping to be able to get ahead before we have a big problem on our hands.
Sure. And what about public transport? I mean, what kind of bump, if any, will that see?
Yeah, so we are working on finalizing an agreement with High Valley Transit to extend the previous contract that we've had with them. What we're looking at is actually an expanded frequency of the 106 line that connects between Heber City and Park City as a part of that process. But other than that, not a whole lot of change.
Okay, and that money will come from what?
Yeah, we actually adopted a transit sales tax last year, and so we have funding in place for that. So I think we'll be able to cover it. We don't have enough to launch, you know, some of the bigger ideas, you know, connections to Utah County through a bus line or other things like that. We don't yet feel like there's a need or the ability to launch a microtransit service in the Mayflower or Deer Valley East Village area just yet. But those things are things that we are anticipating and hope to be able to do sometime in the future.
All right. And when we talk about an expanded 106, what does that mean?
I believe they're shifting. The proposal is to shift from hour frequency to 45-minute frequency pickups along that route.
Okay. And then the micro that is in place would continue?
Correct.
Okay. Let's see. Anything else you want to tell us about the budget at this point?
No, I think other than that, you know, we have the opportunity to be able to address a lot of the growing costs with our existing resources. So for the general fund, you know, there's no need for tax increases. We are expecting to start construction of our administration building. This is a big project, but thankfully the county has set aside a lot of funds for the last few years, and we don't need to go back to taxpayers to pay for that new administration building.
Okay. Turning to the Jordan L. Ridge, the council delayed voting on an open space agreement with Heber City and the Jordan L. Ridge developer until next month. What are you hoping to discuss between now and then?
What I think the council was hoping to do is, first of all, kind of correct some misconceptions that have been out there about the nature of the conservation easement that's before us. I think the confusion has come from the fact that this conservation easement has some differences to what we have done through our open space bond funds. Our open space bond funds have been specifically federally supported conservation easements that have basically IRS standards for things that they need to meet in order to get tax benefits. This conservation easement doesn't have any tax benefits. Actually, the only benefits that are going to be reaped are going to be by the public, because this will be publicly accessible as it has been and will continue to be. So it will be property that's owned by the HOA, just like a farmer owns their land, but the conservation easement would be held by Wasatch County and Heber City jointly. So what we have been talking about is potentially making some tweaks to that agreement so that we can ensure that we can adequately assess and enforce those protections and make sure that they remain in place in perpetuity.
All right. So I guess I don't understand the difference between this agreement and a conventional conservation easement.
Yeah, so the ones that we have done that are these federal IRS kind of tax incentive projects, these are ones that are held by third-party land trusts like Utah Open Lands or Summit Land Conservancy, among other qualified entities. And in order to meet that threshold, there are extra hoops that a project has to go through, and that includes a lot more specificity than what is kind of being proposed in this project. Part of the challenge in this area in particular is that there is ongoing development going to and through this area. So what Wasatch County was able to do is negotiate with Heber City and the developer to ensure that the bounds of what could change in there are very limited to very specific authorized uses. So there's no way that homes could go there. There's no way that unnecessary hardscape would go there, but there may be utility lines. One of the things that I know needs to be in this area is a debris basin, right? This is a large area where you try and catch debris before it falls down on the homes that are below it. Those are the types of things that would need to be worked out prior to a conservation easement. And what that would take is either we approve the conservation easement before us and get some protections in place, or we wait multiple years, potentially even decades, before this development is done, and then hope that we can get a third-party conservation easement the way that we have done these other projects.
All right, so does the developer then of Jordan L. Ridge still receive the tax deduction?
No, so my understanding is there is no tax deduction associated with this. Because it was part of the development agreement that required it, they aren't getting an incentive. Rather, this is just a public benefit associated with the development of the project.
Got it. All right. What about the concerns brought forward by Heber City Mayor Heidi Franco and Summit Land Conservancy that this agreement might not be strong enough? Do you share those concerns?
I mean, I think there's no doubt that a federally supported conservation easement has additional protections that don't exist under this proposed structure. I think overall, Wasatch County feels like this is an opportunity for the county to have a seat at the table in what happens in this area, because, you know, Heber City could have proceeded with this agreement without us, and it would have looked very similar, but only had a single party holding that easement. So rather than see that happen, I think we would rather be able to be involved and ensure that, at least according to the agreement as it sits today, that those things would require, any changes would require Wasatch County to sign off on.
Okay. Wasatch County has a couple of council members who sit on that open lands board. What's their take on the issue?
Yeah, so that's Eric Rowland and Carl McMillan, who are on our open lands board. I think Eric's been the most vocal about wanting to ensure that we're working with these kind of best practices. And that's what we've discussed at our open lands board of, are there these tweaks? For instance, like, we're hoping to be able to do and include in the agreement maybe something, some language around what the initial state of the property is, that we can document it, and then explicit process for identifying and curing any violations of that agreement. So that way, those types of kind of generally best practices that could be used in other circumstances, we can kind of bake into this agreement and make sure that, again, there is, we've tried to address issues before they've arisen.
Okay, moving on to the Sheriff's Office. The county and the Sheriff's Office have started implementing some changes in response to the judge's report. Can you talk about some of those changes?
Yeah, so we did our first reading last week of a code amendment to the portion of the county code related to the Deputy Sheriff Merit Commission. This is one of the top recommendations that came out of that report. And mainly what the tweaks do is bring it closer into conformity with state code. It requires the Merit to provide regular updates to the county council, and it tweaks what constitutes a quorum for county code. Previously, we had required that all three members must be present in order to consider any items. As we currently have a vacancy, that means that the Merit Commission can't act. We have pending offers that I know the sheriff would like to extend, but because the Merit Commission can't act with only two of the three members in place, that's causing a few issues. So the proposed code amendment would change that so that if we only had two members, they could approve it if they were unanimous. It still requires two votes out of the three, even if only two people there. So we'll be doing a second reading at our first meeting in November, and I anticipate that we'll be able to adopt that. We've also talked about policy reviews. We have adopted some policies, and we're looking at adopting more that would adjust some of those things. And we've already worked with the Merit Commission to implement some of the staffing support and other changes, the policies that they have. They're supportive in general of adopting the things as we've recommended in management's response to the report's findings.
All right, last week, I was going to say one member of that commission recently resigned. Have you found a replacement for that Deputy Sheriff Merit Commission?
So we actually received four applicants, two people, and one of them cited actually this type of radio interview that they applied, because previously we had not had applicants. But no, we do have four applicants. We're hoping to make a recommendation to the council for appointment at our next meeting in November.
Okay. The county also adopted that new progressive discipline policy. So what's included in that?
So progressive discipline is something that's required by state code. And this doesn't really change overall the general philosophy of discipline, in that you kind of use the least necessary amount of discipline in order to address an issue, and that you progressively escalate those actions as that issue does not get resolved. So this doesn't really change, again, that overall philosophy. What it does do, though, is simplify compared to our previous process. Our previous process had I think steps that were not clearly identified. Some of them were parallel to other steps, and it would not have been as clear which route someone was going. Now, I think the process is just a little bit more simple so that everyone can understand it. And again, the intent is just to make sure that we're being fair to and communicating effectively with our employees about what that process looks like.
And what feedback have you heard from residents in the wake of the judge's report?
You know, not a lot. I think A lot of the discussion is focused around the report and the findings and recommendations in there. I think overall people are, my impression at least, is that people are pleased that we are taking actions. And I think that we have tried to demonstrate that we really consider all of these concerns really seriously. We're taking the report seriously, and we're actively pursuing the improvements as recommended by that report.
All right. Heber City revisiting its proposal for a community reinvestment area, or CRA, to revitalize downtown. Has the city approached the county about a tax sharing agreement?
We have talked a little bit. I think they're aware of a few projects, some of them by developers and others, but we haven't really had any real serious discussions about implementing or the county participating in Heber City's CRA.
All right, so I guess you're not going to, because you've said no, it's all along, and so it just sounds like the no remains, huh?
Yeah, well, I think we have continued to talk with Heber City about downtown revitalization, and I think there's a lot of different ways to approach that, and honestly, it will require multiple approaches in order to address that. I think one of the things that we've tried to shift towards, and we've talked about it at a few meetings, is doing something on the Wasatch County Administration Building site that is downtown adjacent to the Tabernacle. We've convened a committee with Heber City, a citizen, and some Wasatch County Council members to try and make this space, rather than sell it to Heber City, which is what we had been considering, is actually to make it an attractive place for people to come. And that puts the emphasis on the historic structure that the Tabernacle represents for our community, so that we think this is a way that the county can pour resources into something that preserves some open space in the downtown area while simultaneously incentivizing people to come downtown and help Heber City achieve their vision of a vibrant downtown.
All right. There was a public hearing at last week's meeting for several dozen condominiums to go on 4 acres near the Jordanelle. Did the county council support that project?
So those items actually got continued. There's a little bit of a procedural hiccup in that we needed to take a different step first. So the council didn't actually consider it at last week's meeting. And so it'll go back to Planning Commission for what we call a density determination. So there's an earlier step in the process that we need to take still.
Okay. The county council heard a MIDA update about the Deer Valley expansion. As we've discussed, traffic already pretty bad from the Mayflower exit there to River Road. Any concerns that this is only going to make it worse? And I guess, is the county ready for the impacts that will come with that East Village opening?
I mean, that's part of why we wanted to talk about it, to make sure that the council and the public have as much information available of, you know, this expansion is sizable in both geography and in importance to Wasatch County and the impacts it's going to have to us. There's absolutely going to be a learning curve to figuring out what the best way to mitigate some of these impacts and do what we can to be proactive about it. One of our biggest partners in this is UDOT. UDOT is doing a Highway 40 corridor study. This is from Highway 40, where it connects with 80 on the north end, all the way down to where the Heber Valley EIS project ends at that River Road 32 intersection. And they identified that Mayflower interchange by Deer Valley East Village is the second highest priority intersection that needs to be addressed. And so I think working with UDA on this project and others, I think there are things that we can do, like lane widening. I know they're looking at potential frontage road systems, additional interchanges, and trying to get some of that, what ultimately is almost local traffic, off of Highway 40, so that it ends up being more through traffic. And I'm optimistic that with a lot of a collaboration, we can have a meaningful impact on traffic and transportation into and through and within that area.
Okay. Anything else, Dustin?
No, not this morning.
All right. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, local writer and researcher Linda George, along with filmmaker Russ Downard, has spent the summer fact-finding and interviewing the founders and visionaries of Park City's Mighty Trail System. They join me now in studio to tell us more about the project and how the community can help. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Thanks, Lucy.
Linda, I met you, a couple of years ago, and you told me about the project you were developing. Can you give us just a kind of a quick overview of what you're doing?
Sure. Love to. So I've been exploring and enjoying Park City Trail since the late 80s, and over time I've gotten really curious about the names of a lot of the trails. And so I went and talked to Laura Anthony about an idea about writing a trail guide with some history, and she was excited. And she also reached out to Ross about possibly doing a film. So that was basically the start of it. We've been doing a lot of research and work on this.
Okay, so the project has two parts, a trail guidebook and a film?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
All right, so maybe Ross, tell us a little bit about your background and how you kind of got roped into doing this.
Yeah, for sure. I've been in Park City for a long time, 21 years now. So I've worked through the years from photography, drone, video for a long time. And I've done everything for mountain trails, live give videos, photo shoots, video shoots for those guys for a long time. So when this came up with Linda and something on Charlie Sturgis's plate and Jan's plate for a long time, that we need to tell this story. We need to tell this story of how our trail system came to be what it is today. And so that's essentially how I got roped in.
Okay. So, Linda, how many people have you talked to, interviewed?
Well, along with Ross, which I sat in on several videos, I think that's about, what, 10 or 12?
10 or 12, yeah.
And then I've been doing a lot of collecting background articles and so on, just getting started on audio interviews with individual trail initiators and builders.
Okay. So the book itself, it's going to be more than just a book of maps. It's going to be there'll be narrative in there, yeah.
Yeah. And I've been thinking about that lately. I'm not sure if it makes sense. I'll have to talk to Laura. I was hoping it would be a fundraiser partly for mountain trails because they've had trail guides in the past. But also thinking about the Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History are doing some sort of interactive app for their new mining trail. So I'm not sure the format of this guide, but I'm excited to be working on it.
Yeah, so any interviews or other discoveries that have kind of surprised you?
Oh, surprised.
There's been a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. From Linda's perspective, and I mean, the premise of what Linda's trying to do is how our trails got their names, you know, and Troy Duffin's a great person with this whole scenario. And he was the original director for Mountain Trails, and then he became Alpine Trails, which split because at that time, you know, Mountain Trails was not a builder of trails, you know, so they needed somebody to go out and construct these trails. So Troy has named a lot of trails around here, and you know, some really good examples of that, it was the Valderon development that was supposed to go into Round Valley, and that was a huge contention in the community, and that could have been golf courses, condos, houses, and all that kind of stuff. And in one of the planning commission meetings with the community, Charlie rallied the community to come to this meeting, and the developer there was talking about how this is going to be a great thing for the community. And someone in the audience asked, well, what are you going to do about the elk that live in Round Valley? And the developer said, well, if there's elk there, they don't belong there. And so that's where Nowhere Elks, Somewhere Elks, la-di-da, all came to fruition.
Okay. So, I mean, in addition to the usual suspects, Troy Duffin, Charlie Sturgis, Jan Wilking, who are some of the others you've talked to?
Don Taylor.
Yep.
He was great. You know, early days of Deer Valley, pioneering the lift serve stuff. Heinrich Dieters was an absolute great storyteller and had a lot of good stuff. Because when he was growing up, he was at that punk teenager kind of age, you know, so he had a lot of great stories. Tom Clyde was great. You know, Tom had some really good points with this town because, you know, and Sally Elliott was another one. And Sally had made a comment where this town was a lot of mavericks, you know, and then Tom reinforced that. This town was people that were square pegs that didn't fit into round holes. You know, everybody that lived here with intent, you know. So this kind of created this perfect storm to, you know, basically make this trail system what it is today.
Yeah, Tom mentioned how he'd been a corporate attorney in Salt Lake
attorney,
and lasted about a week, and he decided he was going to die if he stayed there long, so he came up here.
Well, and he
thank
served
goodness.
As Park City attorney for several years as well.
Yeah.
So, Ross, you're of course filming all of the interviews, but what else are you capturing on film so we just don't have a film of talking heads?
Oh, yeah. So we have, I've been shooting mountain biking in this town for most of the time that I've been in here. So from my own archives, I have a substantial amount. And that was for entities like Mountain Bike Park City, the Chamber, Deer Valley, you know, and the Chamber and Deer Valley are both our biggest backers. So I have access to use everything I've shot for them over the years. And as well, you know, I've just been shooting Park City in its best conditions, you know, its best light, its best locations, just to really showcase how beautiful these trails are.
Yeah, so you've got bikers on those dinosaurs, right? I mean, a bike then that would weigh more than an electric bike today.
Yeah, absolutely.
No shocks, no suspension whatsoever.
That's the main thing that we're looking for, and that's why we wanted to come in today, was to put out an outreach to the community, because we need archival footage. We need archival photos, and anything from the early 80s to the early 2000s, somewhere in that range. 90s and 80s are ideal, but you know, if you guys have stuff laying around in the closet, photos, old videos, like, we need it.
Maps, articles.
Yeah, anything. Yeah.
We have an email address.
Yeah, go ahead.
ParkCityTrailHistory@gmail.com. ParkCityTrailHistory, all spelled out.
Okay, so this is back in the day of VHS. And
yes, yes, absolutely.
Right, and viral film, some bad colored printed photos, I'm guessing, but you can make it look good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nowadays with AI and the way things have gone, I can bring photos to life and do some really cool stuff with it. Deer Valley had some great stuff from the early 90s, like some commercials that they shot that I have. There's lots of stuff around the Norba races that is a big part of our history. Park City Television has a great archive stuff, but that really came in the early 2000s, you know. So trying to find this stuff, like Joan Thompson, local, she had great photos of her daughters, Whitney and Carrie, riding in foam helmets, you know, like on rigid bikes, you know, all that kind of stuff, which I'm sure, if you talk to Whitney and Carrie, they weren't very happy to be out there doing that stuff with her dad, but that's a legacy and a background that they both really cherish nowadays.
Okay, so how long of a film are you planning on?
So we're shooting for 39 minutes because that's the sweet spot for film festivals. You know, like that gives us a better chance to get it into film festivals to be shown outside of Park City. And then with the Chamber, after we kind of go through the rounds of showing the film, we're going to cut episodes. And those episodes might be a little bit longer and go more in depth into each little section of the story. And those will live on the Chamber's YouTube page.
Okay, so what's the timeline for the film then? I mean, you're from the very first mountain bikes, huh?
Yeah, so in the early 80s, really what kicked it off was when Specialized came out with its first consumer-faced mountain bike. And that was something that you could buy and not modify or, you know, clunker to some sort of degree. And Tom Noker's store actually was, you know, trying to sell these bikes, but there was nowhere for them to go ride them. You know, they would go out on the old mining pass or dirt roads, essentially, and ride them. But, you know, the catalyst was pirate trail building.
Yeah, so you've able to talk with a couple of those folks, kind of built their own trails?
A few. We've got denied by,
working on it,
you know, by a couple because they're, you know, they don't want to be considered as pirates, essentially. But it's part of our culture. It's how our trail system started. And it still kind of pushes things today.
Yeah. So when do you, have all of the interviews wrapped at this point or no?
Nope.
No, we still have a couple to go, but we're rounding third, essentially. So we're almost done, and as much as I would love to interview everyone that was part of this story, it's just not feasible, you know, from a storytelling standpoint. But we kind of got a couple left, and then we're hoping to have this all finished by the end of the year, and we have a restaurant tax grant that we got. And that's all for distribution. So we have to get that done and spent by a certain time. So it's kind of nice. It puts an end date on it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're hoping to have the film finished by the end of the year?
Yeah, by the end of the year. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've kind of been editing going as you've gone along? Or?
Yeah, been going through things. We have a teaser that we have not released yet, but that'll be coming soon, I would imagine. So.
And meanwhile, I'm happy I have no end to people I'm happy to interview about the specific trails. For example, I'm probably going to talk to the Sun Peak 3 for Collins, Dubois, and Robs pretty soon. Looking forward to that. So mine's kind of a trail-by-trail broad, and the archive of that will go into the Park City Museum.
Okay. All right. So in terms of your book, when he's got the end of the year, it sounds like you've got a little bit longer timeline there.
I do. And my main project at the moment is just collecting information, doing more interviews, that sort of thing.
Yeah, we got a lot of trails, so Linda's got a much bigger job
than
I do.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me again the website.
Oh,
it's just an email address.
Email, yeah. Park City Trail History.
Trail History. Okay.
@gmail.com.
All right. Anything else you guys want to mention?
No, we're really excited to finish this. It's an amazing story. Like, it was really a perfect storm of all these people coming together, and Park City was a leader in that realm, and from that, these guys have gone out and taught a lot of other communities, and we hope that this does the same thing. You know, it kind of puts a blueprint in place for other communities to follow Park City and develop trail networks like ours that are just such the veins of the community, you know.
Yeah. So is Park City, is that going to be your premiere, or?
Oh, yeah. Park City is going to be our premiere. We're going to try to raise money for the mountain trails and everybody that's involved with that kind of stuff. And, hopefully kick this off on another level if we need that. You know, nowadays it seems more about maintaining trails than building new ones.
Yeah. Well, can't wait to see it and read it. All right.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you.
Linda George, Ross Donner, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
We're in the studio now with an update from Recycle Utah. I have Board Chair Ken Barford along with Communications Outreach Manager Chelsea Hafer. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Leslie.
Yeah, so Ken, how's it going? I mean, in the last month or so, Recycle Utah has lost its general manager and education director.
Yeah. things are actually, as quick as things have changed, and they're moving rapidly, they're all for the positive. I could not be more excited. This is a very exciting time for us. As you know, we've been here in Park City for nearly 35 years on 3/10 of an acre, and it's been wonderful, wonderful last few months to see just the blinding speed at which things have changed. Couldn't be more excited.
All right. So, are you advertising for both positions then? Do you plan to replace?
As I said, blinding speed is not an understatement. We actually have just closed the applications for a new executive director, and we are astounded at the quality of the applicants that we had. We expected that we would have to cast a net. Nationwide even, and we're completely open to it, but the local population between Summit County and the Wasatch Front have produced outstanding candidates, and we could not be more excited at the prospect of one of those candidates joining us. So we're moving rapidly through the process right now. Search committee has been fabulous.
All right, so what's the timeline on that? I mean,
we just finished start of second round of interviews already, and originally I had expected and hoped that we could be complete within 90 days. It's going to be much less than 90 days. So we're excited about that and looking forward to having the candidates who, because they are all, at least for the moment, Utah-based, having them meet stakeholders here in the community, our staff. We've got an unbelievably strong staff and very strong board. So we are looking forward to sometime by the end of November.
Great. And then in terms of the education director with Mary Closser's retirement?
That's me.
So you stepped up. You're the new education director. Okay.
Yeah, I've been training for 2 years with Mary to take her position. So that was kind of the natural transition. There was a lot to learn, so I think it would have been hard for someone to just step in and learn Mary's ways. But yes, so that's what I'm doing now.
And it's really quite seamless. Chelsea has been a highly valued member of our staff for us, and she also wears a hat in communications as well and in some events as well.
We'll talk a little bit more about that. So your position as kind of the outreach director, that won't be replaced, it sounds like.
Yeah, so we're doing some restructuring. Mary and I actually had a wonderful intern from the University of Utah who was working with us from January to August, and then she got hired in September to be our administrative officer. Her name's Mia, and she is now working. She's been working in education through her internship for the last 8 months, and so it's been really easy sharing the education with her, and she's a really fast learner, and she's wonderful with the kids, so that's been awesome, too.
Great. We have also recently reported that Recycle Utah will have a new home. Apparently, an agreement has been signed for Recycle Utah to take over 4 acres of land off of US 40 near Silver Summit. We have heard that that's not enough for the organization's ultimate plans, but it's what, going to have to do?
It's going to be more than enough for us initially. We're going from 0.3 acre to 4.18 acres, so more than 10x in size. It'll be far more cost effective. The community will welcome a much more safe environment in which to deposit all of their materials to be recycled, or 57 different things that we accept there. And commercial traffic will actually be much more welcome. And for the first time, we will welcome commercial traffic in and out of there to be able to process much more here cost effectively for the community at a far lower cost to taxpayers.
So what is Recycle Utah on the line for? The property's been donated or it remains under Park City or Summit County's ownership?
We are at the moment the recipients of this property that the county and city have worked out details themselves for the property. And at the moment, we are designing building and performing site remediation, moving again every bit as quickly as we've moved in replacing the executive director. And once this is done in the very near future, we will have a far better sense of what the cost of the building and site remediation will be on this site. And that will allow us to then begin to strategize capital campaign and additional funding for both building construction as well as a site preparation.
Yeah. Did you do any soil samples before you said, sure, we'll take this? And the reason I ask is because we know of the bedrock issues that High Valley Transit had to deal with out there.
Sure. The county actually was responsible for all of the site preparation. We're directly adjacent to, on one side, High Valley Transit, and on the other, Mountain Regional Water. So a lot of soil sampling has already been done. Everybody is very much aware of the bedrock that is there as well.
But you really just need a parking lot, yeah?
Essentially, we recognize that this is not going to be the Taj Mahal, but we're perfectly happy to have the correct-sized industrial building, and we're working with a number of different architectural firms and developers to talk about what that will end up looking like. And then once we've got a sense of what that design will look like, we'll have a better understanding of how much financial resources we will require.
Yeah, and the goal ultimately was to increase the diversion rate of kind of a measly 12%. I mean, just having a bigger building, you think will make that happen?
It will absolutely make it happen because, in part, we can now get commercial traffic. And as you well know, this is a hospitality town, and property managers, hotels, and restaurants have not been able to fully use and effectively use our small 0.3 acre on Woodbine. But for the first time, we will be able to effectively divert far more materials from the landfill or from having to travel to Salt Lake City. And again, the county and the city both will be able to pass on cost savings to taxpayers.
All right. And again, since the city and county have provided the property, are they in for any other financial assistance?
That's to be determined yet. We're still trying to assess what the cost of the structure itself will be, what the cost of site remediation will be, and of course, Recycle Utah has always been very frugal operating on the site that we're on now. So we'll see what progress we can make here in the near future.
Okay. Chelsea, let's talk a little bit about some of your upcoming events. What's next, the Green Drinks?
Yeah, so next we have Green Drinks. November Green Drinks is going to be on November 11th at Legacy Lodge. And that's going to be really exciting. We are going to be focusing on waste. So we are going to be hearing from the staff at Waste Management's new materials recovery facility in Salt Lake. So if anyone has any questions about curbside recycling, you can ask the source because they will be here to answer all of your questions. And then we will also be hearing from Park City Mountains Sustainability Coordinator, Erin Fulmore, and she's going to be talking about Park City Mountains waste and diversion programs that they have going on there.
Okay, so November 11th, Legacy Lodge, what time?
6 to 8, and it's $10, and the tickets are for sale on Eventbrite, and you can find them at recycleutah.org.
Okay, it looks like you got another trivia night coming up, too.
We do. On November 18th at 6:30 at Park City Brewing, we're going to have our fall trivia, so that should be fun, and that's free, and more details are, again, on our website. And then we just finished up our tour series, our fall tour series. That went awesome. We had probably about 50 people on three different tours. We did a tour of the landfill. We did a tour of Snyderville Basin Wastewater Reclamation District. And then we also did one of Three Kings Water Treatment Plant. And we will be running those again in the spring. So those sell out pretty fast. They're free, but people can keep an eye out. It was very popular this fall, and we had a lot of fun, and we learned a lot.
Okay, what else you got going on?
We have a few new programs going on at Recycle Utah that are very exciting. We launched our food waste collection last week in partnership with the Community Foundation. So now we have three food waste bins, and the Community Foundation is sponsoring that. And those are open while Recycle Utah's offices are open. So that's Monday through Saturday from 8 to 5:30. And that's free for anyone in the community. There's more information online on what we accept, but we basically accept any organic material besides yard waste and compostable cups and eco products. But any sort of food, paper towels, anything like that is good to go in our food waste bins. And that's really exciting. We're really excited to partner with the Community Foundation on their Zero Food Waste initiative because it's saving a ton of money for taxpayers. And besides the environmental benefits, last year, the Zero Food Waste Initiative alone saved over $100,000 in airspace at the landfill. So we are excited to be a part of that.
Yeah, then, I was going to just ask real quick, though, about that food collection. I have a home compost pile. And again, I have to be very careful about no oils, no meat. But everything goes pretty much?
Yeah, so right now it's being hauled to Wasatch Resource Recovery in Salt Lake. So that's basically natural gas capture from the methane in food waste. And then hopefully eventually it'll be hauled back to Spoil to Soil. But both of those are commercial operations, so they're a lot less picky than a home compost system where you might get rodents and things like that. Because of it's a commercial operation, things break down a lot faster. So it's the same rules if you have, you know, Momentum Recycling picking up your food waste every week. It's the same rules as that.
Great. All right. A couple other programs you want to mention real quick?
Yeah. Ski recycling's back up. You can drop off your skis and snowboards and poles at Recycle Utah for free. And then all of our skis and snowboards are also $10 if you're looking in the bins and you see something you like. And then last month, we launched snack wrapper recycling, which is in our office. That's been really popular. We're just finishing up our first box. And that may not seem like a huge waste stream, but for someone like me who recycles everything I possibly can, that's one of the things that goes into my trash can until now. So that's also very exciting. And that's just inside our office if people are interested in recycling and collecting their snack wrappers, especially around Halloween, like Halloween candy wrappers you can bring to us now.
Okay. All right, guys, anything else?
No.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll see you next month.
Thanks, Leslie.
Maybe with a new director, but we'll
see. Absolutely.
Okay. Ken Barfield, Chelsea Haver with Recycle Utah. Thanks for your time.